Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the OIES China Energy Programme. My name is Michal Maidan. I'm director of the China Energy Research at the Institute. I'm delighted to be joined today by Kevin Tu, who has recently joined us as a senior visiting research fellow. But Kevin is very prolific. He is also a non-resident fellow at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University. He's managing director of Agora Energy Transition China, as well as an adjunct professor at the School of Environment of Beijing Normal University. So we are delighted to have him both at OIES, but also on this podcast today to discuss his recently published paper on the prospects of the Chinese coal chemicals industry in an increasingly carbon-constrained world. Kevin, welcome to the OIES and welcome to the OIES podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's start with this very interesting topic. And I want to start with a somewhat broad question to give a bit of context. Why are we even discussing the coal chemical sector in China? Why did you think it was important to write a paper on this topic? As we know that, or we assume and hope that for the global energy transition, coal is in decline globally.
This is a very good question. If we look at China, it is the largest coal mining and consuming economy in the world, accounting for more than half of global production and consumption. But if we look at where the consumption comes from, the international community primarily focusing on coal power industry because this sector now represents more than half of China's coal demand. However, if we take a closer look, the second biggest coal processing sector in China actually is the coal chemical industry, which process near one quarter of national coal throughput, as well as 5.4% of global carbon dioxide emission. Looking ahead, this is the only major coal consuming sector which still possesses great potential in terms of capacity expansion as well as emissions growth. So this is the reason why I'm writing this report.
In a world that is, as you yourself put it, increasingly carbon constrained, why would the coal chemical sector have this much capacity? And maybe, I guess, in order to address the outlook in the future, we need to talk a little bit about the history, the kind of political economy significance of this industry. How did it develop and grow to become such a big and important consumer of coal?
If we look at the importance of coal chemical industry in China, it first rests on the national circumstance of China. Normally, we characterize China's resource endowments as rich in coal, but relatively poor in terms of conventional oil and gas resource. So that's why to stimulate China's economic growth, the country needs to import more and more oil and gas. This leads to quite serious energy security concerns, especially among key decision makers. However, since the inception of the People's Republic of China in 1949, the Chinese coal chemical industry has developed from the traditional coal chemical to the so-called modern coal chemical, which increasingly rely on domestically abundant coal to substitute oil and gas imports as well as chemical imports. In the past, China primarily relied on technological imports as well as equipment from overseas market to develop this industry. However, after decades of development, China now features some of the world's most advanced coal technology as well as manufacturers. So this on the one hand help China improve national energy security. On the other hand, this become a major concern, especially from air pollution as well as emissions perspective.
How does that all fit in with, you know, and regular listeners of our podcast will know about the independent refiners, new refining and petrochemical capacity that is being added in China? Who are, I guess, the traditional players in the coal chemical industry in China? Is there a geography to the coal chemicals industry in China? And how has that developed? And I think that will stop with the history and the context of coal chemicals and start looking at the future. But I think it is important to understand how it fits in with the broader chemicals picture in the country.
If we look at the broader chemicals industry, of course, the petrochemical players such as the Sinopec, CNPC are always important. In addition, the so-called teapot refineries, especially those in Shandong province, are also playing a very important role in terms of chemical manufacturing in China. However, if we look at who are really behind the coal chemical development in China, first, the key decision makers in Beijing, because who always have the energy security design in mind, because energy security, especially amid rising geopolitical tensions. The second important player in China is the local government in coal regions, because they are always interested in climbing up the value chain by converting the relatively abundant but low-cost coal to more high-value-added chemical products. The third important player in Chinese coal chemical industry is those coal company and coal groups such as China Energy Investment, which is the former Shenhua, as well as the major private coal company like Baofeng in Ningxia. In terms of geographic distribution of coal chemical production in China, primarily in coal regions such as Shanxi, Ningxia, Inner Mongolia. However, in coastal provinces such as Hebei and Shandong, we could also witness quite substantial coal chemical operations. Most interestingly, actually, Beijing is the city with the most coal chemical company. I think the reason is primarily that their headquarters register in Beijing, not necessarily their operations. So this is the political economy of coal chemical industry is in this part of the world, and it's rather complicated. But if we look at the interaction among different stakeholders, we can have a better sense of understanding well the industry may develop in the decades to come.
Interesting that there's a very strong, I guess, incumbency in the coal chemical sector in China. In terms of economic competitiveness, how should we think about coal chemicals versus other chemicals?
If we look at coal chemicals, on the one hand, because of the resource availability of, and also relatively no input costs of coal chemical production plus certain cost advantage against other type of chemical operations, especially petrochemical manufacturing. However, one of the reasons is not all the environmental externalities of coal consumption, especially water contamination, carbon dioxide emissions, as well as the air pollutant discharge, have been internalized in the Chinese coal value chain. For instance, if we look at hydrogen production, if we look at the cost of green or black hydrogen in the Chinese context, the cost could be as low as 10 to 14 yuan per kilogram of hydrogen production. However, if we talk about the unit cost of renewable hydrogen, the cost could range from 25 yuan to more than 70 yuan per kilogram of production. That's why whenever we look at the cost competitiveness of coal chemical industry, we should have a full accounting of the social costs, which means how to internalize all the environmental externalities into the life cycle costs of coal chemical production is very important for regulating this industry in the years to come.
And to your point, right, it is coal chemicals, our coal-based industry. You laid out the externalities, the concerns, the emissions. But how does the central government weigh the benefits of energy security, of incumbency, of the political weight of the coal chemicals industry against China's pledge to peak carbon emissions before 2030 and reach net zero by 2060?
So if we look at China's dual carbon goals of peaking national carbon dioxide emissions by 2030 and achieving carbon neutrality before 2060, it's rather unique, and also it's not as same as the net zero commitment made by typical OECD countries, which normally is a climate neutrality goal by the middle century. The reason is very simple, because although China could be considered as a big country from absolute term, but if we look at the country from the per capita basis, the country still lag far behind a typical advanced economy. So I personally categorize China as a hybrid superpower. So China's dual carbon goal actually is compatible with its status of hybrid superpower. Before 2030, the mentality of Chinese decision makers have the so-called developing country mentality, because they grew up when China was real a backward developing country. However, after 2030, China is expected to become a high-income country. So that's why after 2030, I expect China's energy and climate policy will increasingly similar as a typical OECD countries. So that's why if we look at the future of the coal chemical industry, by 2030, the rising emission from this major coal-consuming sector probably is not a major concern, especially for local government. However, after 2030, once China starts to drastically reduce its carbon dioxide emissions in order to meet the carbon neutrality goal, then the rising emissions from this sector will become an increasing policy concern, not only for local government, but also for the central government in Beijing. So that's why there's a rising pressure across the coal chemical industry to find a solution to deal with the potential rising carbon dioxide emissions in the years to come.
I mean, that's a really interesting dynamic. I think we're seeing it sort of play out in China's energy and climate policy across the board. There is a recognition that post-2030, things will have to change quite substantially. But there's also a feeling that we're kicking the can down the road a little bit by saying, Right now, we still need to grow, we still need to develop, we're adding capacity, we're focusing on energy security. We'll deal with the fallout later, but of course, adding that capacity now complicates the future trajectory, arguably increases the costs of reducing emissions post-2030. I guess, can you talk a bit more about how the coal chemicals industry is thinking about its future, about trying to adapt? Is it making any sort of preparations or taking steps now? Or is it more the mindset that right now we can still build, we can still add before peak emissions hit, and we'll worry with the fallout later?
Whenever we talk about the Chinese coal chemical industry, we need to differentiate the conventional coal chemical industry, such as the coke manufacturing, or the so-called modern coal chemical industry, such as coal to oil, coal to gas, and coal to olefin, among other petrochemical products. So in this regard, when we look at the conventional coal chemical industry, its future actually largely depends on the downstream sector, for instance, because coke is primarily used for iron and steel smelting. So its future largely depends on the production trajectory of iron and steel output in China, which actually is expected to decline soon. So that's why the future of the conventional coal chemical industry is not very promising. However, the growth will primarily come from the so-called modern coal chemical industry. This industry is very interesting. On the one hand, it indeed could help China to alleviate its rising energy security anxiety to a certain extent. However, if we look at the amount of coal that will be needed in order to reduce China's rising dependence rates on oil and gas imports, which have already exceeded 70% and 40% respectively, the environmental cost, especially in terms of carbon dioxide emissions, will be enormous. So that's why China should really think very carefully whether it's worthwhile to pursue this pathway in order to improve its energy security. Another important consideration is the rising geopolitical rivalry. If we look at where the world is, well, arguably, in the era of poly crisis, ranging from climate crisis to the ongoing war in Ukraine and Gaza Strip. So that's why it's very important for major economy in the world trying to find a politically plausible solution to alleviate the rising geopolitical rivalry. Otherwise, the rising energy security in China as well as other parts of the world cannot be easily ignored with quite detrimental impacts on global climate agenda.
Interesting. We talk a lot at the Institute, of course, about energy security and perceptions of oil insecurity. And of course, with peak gasoline and diesel demand coming relatively soon, the Chinese government seems a bit more sanguine on that front. But of course, chemicals demand is set to rise. And so coal chemicals is really significant in that respect. I think you talked about the kind of traditional coal chemicals industry. It's important for steel and iron, and I guess part of the solution is that demand for those industries in China will gradually start to slow. There's also, I guess, the industrial decarbonization question, and how do industries decarbonize? Of course, in the West, one of the things that's being looked at a lot is hydrogen, CCUS, as a way to deal with industrial decarbonization. You talk in the paper about the potential of hydrogen and CCUS in the coal chemical sector. Can you talk us through that a little bit? Are there already plans and projects that are underway? Is this a realistic pathway for the sector? How should we think about cost competitiveness and what we're seeing in that sort of landscape?
These are two very important technological pathways to decarbonize the industry. Recently, I went to Ningxia, visited Baofeng Energy's green hydrogen project, which is part of coal chemical operations. The objective, of course, is trying to reduce the carbon emissions intensity of the entire coal chemical operations. Recently, Baofeng Energy Group, a Chinese coal chemical products makers, has also kicked off construction of the world's largest facility for the production of olefin from green hydrogen and coal. On the one hand, if we look at the potential of renewable hydrogen to decarbonize not only coal chemical operation, but also iron and steel manufacturing, the potential is huge. The problem is, as for now, first, the cost competitiveness of such technological routes still needs to be supported by additional technological innovation as well as the government regulation, especially carbon pricing signal. Then, if we look at the potential of CCUS to decarbonize the so-called hard-to-abate sector, including coal chemicals. There is a similar concept in the European context. It's the so-called power to X, because in the European context, to utilize renewable electricity to produce e-fuel and to produce other products, actually is the equivalent of CCU, which is carbon capture and utilization. The difference is power to X emphasize more on the hydrogen part of this technological route. But for CCU, it emphasizes more on carbon side of the story. So that's why, on the one hand, I do believe both the renewable hydrogen and CCUS have rather substantial potential to decarbonize the industry. But on the other hand, we also will need lots of government regulation as well as the technological innovation in order to prove these two technological routes in the years to come.
CCS has been around in China for quite a while. It feels like the regulatory framework is ramping up to be slightly more supportive, but the cost reductions and the scale of CCS hasn't really been significant. What would change that?
Oh, I fully agree with you. If we look at the capacity of the CCUS projects in China currently, we are talking about 2 million tons of carbon dioxide capture capacity across the country, which pains when we compare it with China's annual carbon dioxide emissions. In order to ramp up CCUS project at scale across China, there are 2 sides of the story. At the domestic front, of course, China needed to increase the level of carbon pricing signal, because currently we are only talking about around 10 euros per tons of carbon dioxide emissions in China, which is far from sufficient to justify CCUS investment. in any parts of the world. On the other hand, China also needs to enlarge the carbon pricing coverage of its national emissions trading system. Ideally, the country should also consider to initiate a carbon carbon tax in certain parts of the economy, such as the coal chemical industry, in order to best regulate the industry. The another dimension is on the international front. If we look at CCUS development, no matter whether we talk about European Union or United States, the development status so far is also not very promising. So unless CCUS projects could be proved and be deployed at scale, at an advanced economy with a much higher carbon pricing signal, then it might be difficult to convince Chinese stakeholders to move the CCUS deployment at a much larger scale.
What do you think is the outlook for the expansion of the ETS domestically, higher carbon prices? We got some, I guess, slightly mixed signals from the two sessions from the Lianhui that have just concluded in Beijing. There was some language around carbon accounting and carbon emissions, and we've been anticipating, I guess, the extension and expansion of the ETS for a while, but it all seems a little bit unsure and unclear. So what is your view on the outlook for its expansion?
There are both constraints as well as incentives to expand the sector coverage of national emissions trading system in China now. On the one hand, if we look at the quantity of energy and emissions statistical reporting system, there's still lots of work to be done in order to improve accountability of the entire statistical reporting system, which is a major constraint from preventing national emissions trading system to be expanded beyond the power sector. Oh, the second constraint is the economic situation in China, because if the economic growth become a major concern for decision makers, so the energy and the environmental as well as climate policy may have lower priority in terms of decision-making. However, there's also some incentives to encourage further expansion of national emissions trading system in China. The first one is the international pressure imposed by the introduction of CBAM by the European Union, which, of course, will help the sector coverage expansion agenda in China. In addition, if we look at the industry decarbonization agenda in China, China now also face tremendous challenges to think about how to decarbonize those heavy industries, such as iron and steel, as well as the chemical manufacturing, petrochemical, among others. So it will be very helpful if those sectors could be covered by certain carbon pricing signal, whether we are talking about emissions trading system or a carbon tax.
You know, we often hear, and if we look back at China's history, that there have been external drivers for internal change and for domestic developments, I guess. You talked about economic slowdown. You talked about the international pressure. We hear and talk a lot about overcapacity in China. The chemical sector is one sector where there is an issue of overcapacity. You discussed earlier, I guess, the landscape that's split between coal chemicals, the oil and gas majors, the new independent chemical producers. How does it all fit together in the context of overcapacity, slowing economy, the decarbonization agenda? I guess the simple question is sort of who wins and who loses within China? Or is it actually all the excess capacity is exported overseas and it's international losers rather than domestic losers?
Overcapacity throughout the Chinese manufacturing industry is a major concern for not only Chinese stakeholders, but also overseas manufacturers. This is best illustrated by what happens in the solar panel industry. If you look at China's solar panel manufacturing capacity, it could basically meet the demand of the entire world. So as a result, in 2023, if we look at the solar power supply chain from polysilicon to wafer to solar cell to module, the unit cost had been lowered by a range from 40% to 70%, depending on which specific segment we are talking about. In other words, in slightly more than 10 years, Chinese solar panel manufacturers have lowered the global solar power unit cost by more than 95%. This become both a blessing and a curse for global energy transition. On the one hand, if it's not because of overcapacity of Chinese manufacturing industry, we cannot witness so many clean energy equipment as well as other low-cost manufactured goods purchase and deployment across the world. But on the other hand, this overcapacity not only makes the life of overseas manufacturers miserable, but also bankrupt even China's own leading manufacturers in the past. Again, the solar panel industry is a good example. In the past, several of China's leading solar power companies have already gone bankrupt. So that's why, looking ahead, I do believe both the advanced economy and China need to have a serious dialogue to explore whether there is politically plausible, but also mutually beneficial collaboration mode to look at the overcapacity issues in China, because this cannot be resolved with trade frictions, which will not be good for global climate agenda. But on the other hand, because of job and related concerns, it's legitimate for both advanced economy and China to find a solution on this issue.
And I think I would echo that call, because the appetite for dialogue today seems to be very low. And of course, these are exactly the times when we need more of it. We are really running up to the end of our time. There is a very rich paper with lots of interesting information. So maybe one last question is, again, a broader one. If you were to summarize, I guess, the main points or the key takeaways from your paper and really the things to look out for in China's coal chemical sector, what would those be?
I would say the take-home message of my paper is the future of the Chinese coal chemical industry in the longer term actually is highly uncertain, because it could be driven into different directions because of the changes in specific policy drivers. For instance, if energy security become a really important policy concerns amid unexpected geopolitical disruptions, then China would be forced to rely on more on this technology in order to alleviate its rising dependence rates on oil and gas imports. However, if major economies in the world, especially China, US, the European Union, India, as well as the ASEAN countries, could find a way to alleviate the geopolitical tensions in the world, then I strongly believe China will rely much less on the coal chemical production rules to resolve its energy security challenges.
I like that you have ended that on an optimistic or cautiously optimistic note. We will have to stop there, but again, I would encourage our listeners to go to our website and read the full paper in all its richness and details. Kevin, I would like to thank you very much for joining me today. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in. As I say, Kevin's paper and many others and all the rest of our China research is available on our website. We welcome your feedback and thoughts, and we look forward to having you join us on our next discussion. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.